And now, it's one of the most successful ad campaigns in Michigan history.
Carpools, conferences, microwave dinners. They blur one into the next. We lose ourselves in the fog of everyday life and drift away from what matters. But like a beacon in the night, it finds us. The light of more than 100 lighthouses burning through that fog and beckoning us back to what's real and true. This light shines for us all. This light is Pure Michigan. Your trip begins at Michigan.org.
And of course, that is the Pure Michigan campaign, credited with luring 3.2 million out-of-state visitors to Michigan and producing something like $1 billion in new revenue. But long before Tim Allen stepped up to a microphone to sing Michigan's praises, long before the soundtrack from the Cider House Rules became synonymous with the Great Lakes State, marketing wizards were coming up with ads designed to lure tourists to northern Michigan. You can call it Pure Michigan 19th century style. Joining us is Michael Federspiel, who's executive director of the Little Traverse Historical Society, and he teaches history at Central Michigan University. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So when we talk Pure Michigan 19th century style, how far back are we looking?
Well, when we look at the beginning, really, of the advertising campaign, it's primarily associated with the arrival of the railroads, roughly from the 1870s on in northern Michigan.
And so the railroads are coming in. Northern Michigan is there. It's as beautiful then as it is today. So what was the thrust of the advertising?
Well, it is as beautiful as it is today, with the exception of it looked kind of scarred in many areas because the lumber industry had kind of moved in and moved its way out again.
Wow.
And it was an area looking for an identity, looking for an economic basis. And it was an area that the government was giving land grants to railroad companies to try to encourage them to build rail lines to bring people to populate regions. And so with the granting of land to the Grand Rapids and Indiana Railroad Company, you saw them looking then to market their land and market themselves for customers. And so that campaign began in earnest by the late 1870s.
So unlike today's Pure Michigan campaign, the one we just heard, that's bankrolled by the state government. But the funding of advertising in the 1800s were the railroad companies then.
Indeed, and it was an indirect funding, if you will, because that Grand Rapids and Indiana Railroad Company was given upwards of 800,000 acres to build a rail line from Grand Rapids to northern Michigan as a land grant, as a gift from the federal government in that occasion to try to encourage them to get people to settle in the area. And so then the railroad company, turned around and began to publish annual brochures, and they would extol northern Michigan that we know today for sportsmen. They would try to encourage people to come and to be day tourists or occasional tourists. They would eventually move into encouraging people to come and stay at resorts. And the group that they never quite caught on with quite as well were farmers. And originally they thought that they would be able to market northern Michigan for farmers, encouraging Civil War veterans to go there. But the promises of a long growing season and mild winters without cold, deep frost and deep, luscious, fertile soil kind of fell flat. And so those tourists became more of the target as opposed to the settlers and the farmers.
So it truly seems that the big pitch, the big thrust of the tourist advertising wasn't too different than what we hear Tim Allen doing today.
It's really the exact same. If you look at the Pure Michigan campaign today, they show you beautiful images. During those years when the railroads were in charge of this kind of publicity, they would create booklets, annual booklets. The Grand Rapids and Indiana Railroad Company rebranded itself the Fishing Line and produced hundreds of thousands of color booklets that they would have in hotels, in railroad stations. And they would have line sketches and drawings of the northern Michigan sunsets and the streams of northern Michigan. And they would really point to northern Michigan where you could be very active, or where you could be not active at all, that you could lay back and just enjoy the quiet breeze.
And who was being targeted? Where were these being handed out?
That's another commonality. The Pure Michigan campaign really targets primarily non-Michiganians, targets people in the whole Midwestern region as well as Canada, and the same would have been true of Grand Rapids in Indiana. Their primary focus would have been Chicago, St. Louis, Kansas City, Indianapolis, Cleveland to a lesser extent, but they were looking to haul for the long haul those people to northern Michigan, and people in particular in urban environments where the hot, sweltering summers and the polluted conditions made a northern Michigan cool summer with crisp, clean air particularly appetizing.
Well, all they needed was Rachel Portman music and Tim Allen's vocal cords,
exactly.
And they would have it.
And it just is remarkable. When you lay the technique and the advertising strategies of one over the other, they really do line up, and particularly in that whole Midwestern appeal. And that's why when you're in northern Michigan in the summertime, you'll see dozens, if not hundreds, of out-of-state license plates. And we sometimes assume automatically those are just day tourists. People are in just for the day. But when you look at some of those families, they've been in northern Michigan for six generations because they came in those initial campaigns. Families including Ernest Hemingway's family that in 1898 saw those same kind of advertisements and decided to come to northern Michigan around Petoskey. And once there, you know, they discovered that this was a place they wanted to spend some time, bought property, and then would continue to come for the rest of Ernest Michigan years. And the Hemingway family still owns that original cottage.
So those cottages could be great-great-great-grandpas, and it's still in the family. And I, you know what? I never did think of that those folks that could be up there, it's not just a one-shot trip to Michigan.
And that's one of the unusual things about that little Traverse Bay region in particular, is you have resort communities such as Bayview and Wequitancing and Harbor Point, Roaring Brook, that really were founded starting in those 1870s, very shortly after the railroads arrived, and they had their own rules and their own identity, and they were places where people came and they spent the season. You know, they came at the start of the summer, left at the end of the summer, and with some legitimacy, you know, claim that they are locals. You know, they may not live there year-round, but their family has been in that area for over 100 years often.
Overall, then, was the 19th century version of Pure Michigan as smashingly successful as the 21st century version?
I would say it probably depends on your measure, and if you did some calculating for the inflation of money at the time, mm-hmm. I think you would have to say yes. And it had a different wrinkle, though, really, too. Today's program promotes people to come to an existing place with existing businesses. That first version of it, really, in the midst of luring people to the North was building that tourist economy. They were building those luxurious hotels. They were building dining rooms where you could have oysters prepared seven different ways. You know, they were building the local tourist attractions as well. Today, those are all there. They're clearly defined, and we promote people to go there. And today also, we have that year-round aspect, especially the winter tourism with snowmobiling and skiing that was not a part of that originally. Originally, it would have been really exclusively that June through September window when that tourist season opened up and then closed.
But it does seem to me, as I'm hearing you talk about this, that what we all grew up thinking of as that vacation destination of up north could have been totally different if they had not made that big push. It might have become agriculture, or it might have just kind of been there without anything special.
Well, and we all know of communities in northern Michigan whose heyday was that lumber era. Now they've kind of dried up into these small little enclaves. But that west coast, that northwest coast of Michigan, was not to be that way. And we've mentioned the railroad companies, but you also have to remember the steamship companies plied those waters from Chicago up to Mackinac, back and forth. They, too, had their own set of advertisements. And then the locals were not far behind in terms of promoting it as a regional destination. Local businesses, chambers of commerce came together and you know, produced their own literature and their own brochures, their own advertisements. So you had multiple agencies, if you will, or multiple interests that were promoting you to come on up and stay in their town, at their hotels, use their excursions, and use their mode of transportation to and fro.
So it certainly seems when we're talking about tourism in northern Michigan that old adage holds true, that everything old is new again.
That is exactly right.
Thanks so much for talking with us, Mike Federspiel, who is Executive Director of the Little Traverse Historical Society and a history professor at Central Michigan University.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.